What's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
Jake Asman's out there peddling donuts.
I saw that.
And the only person that fell for it was Joe George.
Dipping a donut for Joey.
Only one that fell for it, Joe George. Shipley's or Dunkin'?
What kind of a question is that?
It's a no-brainer.
I didn't grow up on Shipley's, but Shipley's is a million times better.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, honestly, there's probably a bunch in front of Dunkin'.
Jake asked me if I wanted a Dunkin' donut, and I said, absolutely not. Get this garbage away from me.
I'm fat.
Is that the difference between, like, that's the same discussion as, like, Whataburger In-N-Out?
Not even close. Whataburger In-N-Out is worth the conversation.
Okay.
Worth the conversation. Shipley's and Dunkin' is not worth the conversation.
I'm just letting you know that my daughters eat Dunkin' Donuts, and it's simply because it's two doors down from the Starbucks where I get my coffee, and I'm not driving all over for Shipley's.
There's not a Shipley's by me either.
There's one right next to me, and it's dangerous. Very dangerous. All right, let's get to In Case You Missed It for the final week for the second time on a Wednesday at 2 o'clock. Andy Reid, in his 60s, very, very young 60, though, has evolved and changed to still be the greatest offensive mind in the game. How much do you think Andy Reid's evolved in the last 2 decades?
Patrick Mahomes has helped a lot, but I think that the biggest thing for me where I think he has evolved is the fact that he's in his 60s. And he is right there in the mix of still being, he's always been highly regarded as an offensive mind, but the fact that he still is in his 60s when we've seen a lot of older coaches that can adapt, that can't continue to stay with the times with how it relates to offensive and defensive football, I think he's adapted. I think along the way he's learned from his time in Philadelphia to his time in Kansas City, and then obviously when you get Pat Mahomes, it helps. But I think even still, when you've seen his ability to make changes on the fly, to implement things in his game plan and then make adjustments at halftime, I think he's done quite well in terms of adapting.
I don't even know if he is adapting, evolving. I think he's just one of the best offensive minds we've ever seen.
Agreed.
He had great success with Donovan McNabb. He fixed Michael Vick. I mean, Michael Vick was a better quarterback after going to jail with the Eagles than he was with the Falcons. He had the best season of Alex Smith's career. They had like 5,000 yards that year on offense for passing.
Yeah.
And then he has Pat Mahomes. And, like, honestly, what did he do last year? Didn't he win a playoff game with Chad Henne?
He did. Kevin Cobb was another Eagle that had very good success that style.
Trying to remember who it was.
And I think the in-game, whether it's, you know, and he was trying to his best to give all the credit to Bieniemy because he wants Bieniemy to succeed and get a chance to be a head coach. But when you look at it, those plays that were implemented that the Kansas City Chiefs ran that allowed their receivers to get wide open and really, you know, give the defense fits, those were Andy Reid drawn up plays that were drawn up well before they got into the game that week. And you have to give him his flowers and say, look, that's the kind of guy he is. That's what he's capable of doing, no matter who his skill position players are.
I was having this conversation the other day with some buddies talking about the evolution of the game and just like how much more it's an offensive game now, how much pass happy it is now versus what it used to be. And they brought, well, you know, Andy Reid's always been throwing the football. I agree with both of you. I think that Reid has evolved to like this modern day and age, but I also think he was cutting edge back then. And I agree with Joe. I think he's one of the best offensive minds that we've ever seen in NFL history. Pat Mahomes has played 6 years in the NFL. Now, the first year he didn't really play, so he's really only played 5 years in the NFL. Of those 5 years, he's thrown over 600 passes twice. Donovan McNabb never threw over 600 passes over the course of his career. So he's evolved kind of like the NFL has evolved to where it's more pass happy, and he's got one of the better quarterbacks we've ever seen. Now, every quarterback under Andy Reid has been really good. It's why you love that pairing. I agree. I think Reid has evolved, and I think Reid is one of the best offensive minds that we've ever seen in NFL history.
I don't know if you call it the Holmgren tree, but even the Philly special and what Peterson did there and what Peterson's become, it is in part due to the fact that they all came under the same tree from Andy Reid and Peterson working together. Peterson believes a quarterback's coach after Reid was. And that tree right there has got a lot of solid offensive play callers that really know how to call football in the NFL.
LeBron James is coming back tonight.
Yay.
First time we're seeing LeBron James.
You know why? National TV. More me time.
Since breaking the record. Now, we have seen him on national TV since then.
It's just, yeah, in the Super Bowl in a suite. Booing the referee on a call.
Yeah, it's about time that LeBron gets back on the floor. His team, as of right now, is outside of the Western Conference playoffs.
2.5 out of the 10 right now. They could have been a lot closer, even winning a game without him that a lot of people didn't give him a chance to win, but he could have helped. And again, we go back to the fact that once he got his individual record and his me was checked off the list, he alienated his teammates in the fourth quarter. They lost the game. They had every chance to win. And from that point on, hasn't played since. And I actually caught a Super Bowl game instead of being on the road with the team in Portland. Yay, LeBron's playing. Good luck to you. But don't start whining and bitching about Rob Pelinka and moves and team, and we got to make the playoffs and win titles. Doesn't seem like you're too hell-bent on giving your team the record it needs to get there.
Remember what he tweeted whenever Kyrie Irving was traded?
Maybe it's me.
Maybe he's right. Yeah. Maybe he's right. Do the Lakers make the play-in game?
I think they're going to – look, that they improved their roster. If he does play at all, and Anthony Davis is the bigger question, too, because that dude's never healthy.
Uh-huh.
But I think the Lakers can make the play-in game.
They're 2.5 behind Utah for 10th. They have – let's do the math here really quick. Let's see. They've played 58 games, so there's 24 games left. 24 games left, 2.5 back of Utah.
Yeah, they'll make it.
Do they make the not
the actual playoff?
The top six. They're trailing Dallas by 4.5.
No.
I don't think so either. Clippers are ahead of them. They're 5 games behind the Clippers.
Like, you know, just you can get
that's through, a lot of games.
You
in
can
24.
Get through the play-in only to play, you know, and then you got to play the one seed. Unless the one seed is Denver, and even still, I don't think that they win. I don't think they make the actual. I think they'll make the play-in, but I don't think they'll make the playoffs.
I don't think it's a lock. I think that they make the play-in, but I think it's going to be tighter than what we would think. Jacob DeGrom, apparently Joe George is already missing a few days.
Yeah, they're going to sit him down for a couple days. They say it's the cold weather change in Arizona is bothering him a little bit. They're being precautionary, but he's going to sit out a couple days and. They don't think it's a long-term injury.
Six-man rotation coming.
But what a joke.
In Arlington.
The cold weather is bothering him?
Something about his shoulder, yeah.
Are they?
It's already starting.
They're in Arizona?
Yeah.
What is bothering him about the cold weather?
Ooh.
Quick change.
What do you mean, quick change?
He's getting old.
Well, and just knowing what Vegas is like when everybody assumes Vegas is always hot desert.
And it's soreness that he's experiencing, yeah, from it.
It's 55 in Arizona today.
That's cold.
That's cold.
Is that why he signed with the Rangers?
So he can be hurt all the time?
Can't handle the cold weather?
Mm. Possible.
Needs to be in the Texas heat.
Mm. And with the big barbecue grill with the roof on it.
I think it is going to help Jose Abreu. So if I think it's going to help Jose Abreu.
It should help Jacob DeGrom.
I can't talk out of both sides of my mouth and say it's not going to help Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, but it'll
help him when he's out there.
Yeah, it's always a
but that's, it's
question
a,
mark.
It's a when he's out there.
It's availability.
My buddy texted me and said that that Jacob DeGrom already missing a few days did not affect the Texas Ranger line at all for their odds to do whatever. Frankie Montas is already also going to be out for almost the entire year. Calvin Ridley has applied for reinstatement. Pete Rose of the NFL applying for reinstatement. Remember, he retired, then got suspended for a year. Then he got traded to Jacksonville.
Well, he didn't retire. He just
I thought he did retire.
No, I think he just they gave him personal time and a leave of absence.
That's right. That's right. Same thing.
Look, I for the punishments that were bigger for a lot, I mean, for what he did as opposed to what Deshaun Watson did, and for him to get a full year suspension, he should reapply. They should let him back in the league. You hope lesson learned. If it's not, then you can come down, you know, really hard the next time and do what you have to do. But the guy should be in the league this year.
You don't think he should have been suspended for a year?
Based on what, if everything that they've said that's come out was accurate, and he didn't bet against his team and he bet for his team, and it was just casual while he was on the injured list. I don't think it was that severe, and I'd let him back. He did the time, and you hope he learned from it, and then you let him back in.
No, he absolutely should be reinstated.
I think the suspension was worthy.
Me too. That's what I'm saying. He should have been suspended
all,
a year.
Like, you have to set a standard with all the legalized gambling, even though it's minimal. Like, you got to nip it in the butt right away.
Absolutely.
Second of all, they got caught because they have partnerships with DraftKings and all these things. You have to submit your Social Security number on these websites.
And his name.
And your name. So, like, you can't get away with putting a fake name and not a real social.
So, he's the Astros of gambling by players.
Yeah,
he has to be the poster
child. The Astros aren't stupid. They're geniuses. They just cheated better than everyone else. Calvin Ridley, you just, idiot.
He's dumb.
Yeah, he.
And to waste your money on parlays.
But I'm just saying they made him the example, and that's why the punishment was more severe.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So no
with
one
it.
Does it again.
Well, I think it's the standard though. Like I think it's in like it's NFL policy. If you're betting on games, you get a year.
It's written into the collective bargaining.
Yeah, yes. You get a year. I mean, that's what it is. It's right there in black and white. Ridley, like you said, was so stupid. He didn't have a buddy place his bets.
The real question is, how high are we taking Ridley in fantasy drafts next
pretty
year?
Pretty high.
Especially with the way that offense came on late in the year.
He basically hasn't played in 2 years.
Don't care. I don't care.
Jeremy, again, can't talk out of both sides of his mouth. If he believes Deshaun Watson's still a top-10 quarterback and he sat out almost 2 years, he believes in Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, I think it's easier for a receiver.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's easier for a receiver to come back day one and be, like, effective. And plus, he's going to have the whole offseason. He's going to have a whole preseason. Like, Deshaun Watson started, like, I know he was working out, things like that, but he was...
game speed and all that.
Yeah, it's much more difficult as a quarterback. I am curious about the ADP of Calvin Ridley. Because that's an offense that's an offensive, happy offense. So you're going to have, like, they're going to be a little bit inflated compared to other players who are not in offensive, happy offenses. I think Ridley's going to go pretty high.
I would agree with that.
Does he go in front of Kirk, who had the on-field success this year with Trevor Lawrence?
Here's a hot take. I would say in standard leagues he will, and in PPRs he will not.
I like that. I like that.
Look at me sitting the fence. Look at me hedging the bet.
I mean,
I think it's a great take.
That's decent analysis.
I think all my takes are great, though.
Right, of course.
NBC wants back in the NBA business.
Here we go.
Do you want the NBA to be on NBC?
For one reason.
I mean, what, the theme music?
Give me Round Ball Rock back, please.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
It is so awkward. Is that another John Tesh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such an awkward misplay when someone uses it for college basketball. And I'm like, you just can't do that. There's just only one purpose for that song, and it has to be NBA on NBC. Look, I think the NBA overall, and I was having a chat with some buddies the other day about the fact that I just really believe that the luster is starting to wear off on the NBA as a league. And you've got a ton of talent in this league and some guys worthy of being like superstars like the MJs and Magics and Birds of the past and LeBron still in the league. And I don't think people care. I don't think people care about the NBA a whole lot. I don't think this would have been a bigger, more publicized story in the heydays and the big best times of the NBA. Right now, I don't think people care enough, and they don't watch the national games that are on. That they added that Saturday night game, no one's watching. They added a Sunday afternoon game, no one's watching.
It is really bad for the NBA business if NBC convinces them to do this, and the fallout is ESPN. Because if you think back to, you know, what the NHL used to be. The reason why it used to be something is because ESPN they carried the games. They had NHL games on, was it Wednesday Night Hockey or whatever it was? When they lost those rights, they stopped caring.
Yep.
They didn't talk about
plus
the NHL.
Plus it's oversaturation.
They didn't show the NHL. Like, it was maybe in your top 10 highlights.
Wouldn't you say ESPN, though, like, oversells the NBA right now?
Sure,
that's what I'm saying.
I know.
What if they lose the NBA?
Yeah.
Like, are they going to stop covering the NBA?
Because I think that they sell the NBA more than Major League Baseball.
Oh, they do.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
And I think MLB is a better product than NBA, and maybe because we're in Houston.
Maybe that's a bonus then, because maybe they do more baseball coverage.
Maybe.
Because here's the thing. The market's so oversaturated, and the way everybody's viewing habits have changed, it used to be weekends were must-see TV for sports. Now, during the week, when you're getting ready for bed or you're killing time after dinner... And the fact that every night of the week, TNT's now gone to Tuesdays and Thursdays. ESPN is Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You don't even need to have League Pass, and you can watch NBA and some good matchups Monday through Friday. And on the weekends, you're doing things.
Walker says the Big East uses that song, that theme now.
Oh, it's annoying.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that on Fox. To me, it bothers me more that it's on Fox than it's whatever, college basketball.
It's whatever's on NBC.
I know that Tirico is going to be the dude. I know Tirico would be the guy that would have the
NBA
the
calls.
AC.
Yeah, that'd be the right call.
But bring back Bob Costas. You're going to bring NBC on please, NBA. No. Give me some Bob Costas.
Bring back that dinosaur.
No. I'm just kidding.
Let Jake get him on
kidding.
The show more.
This is an interesting point that someone pointed out on Twitch. ESPN is likely going to get sold by Disney.
Yeah.
They're talking about selling it off.
Really?
They're talking about selling Hulu and ESPN.
I'm out of the Hulu game pretty soon. I'm going to go to DirecTV Stream.
They messed this up so bad.
Who did?
All the streaming companies.
I'm out of DirecTV soon, too, because of the Sunday Ticket.
Well, what was the YouTube TV just got rid of, or one of them just got rid of MLB Network.
YouTube did.
Like yeah.
Oh, YouTube did.
Ben Verlander's losing his mind over
there.
We can just switch, cut the cord again.
He's having an issue.
All right. Evan Drylick was on with Paul Gallant today. He's still our guest. What Evan Drylik had to say, I'm calling him Drylik from now on, what Drylik had to say about his new book, of course, he was the one that broke the whole sign-stealing scandal stuff. Let's play some of what he had to tell Pauly a little bit earlier. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, I'll tell you about the good people at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Check out their menu. Check out their location. Check out how great the Italian food is with all the options at frankiesitaliankitchentx.com. You guys hear me talking about it all the time. And I'm telling you about it from experience because Chris Smith, not only the owner, he's the chef. All the ingredients are made from scratch and fresh. Produce is fresh. The meat is fresh. They get the meat from College Station. They get the produce fresh. And he makes the best sauces and everything that goes with Italian food. They also got an unbelievable pizza kitchen with their ovens. They also have fantastic wings. But the Italian food is what you're going to keep coming back for again and again. Now with a bigger location and basically within a mile of the old location, you can get even more room to spread out with your friends and family. You can go to Dino's Bar, named after Dean Martin, grab a couple cocktails after eating and watch sports on the 8 big screen TVs. But more so than anything else, the catch that's going to keep you coming back is that great Italian food, the weekly specials, the brunches on Sundays, the lunch specials during the week. It's all part of it. If you're in the Richmond, Katy, Sugarland area, it is right there where you need it to be. If it's a little bit more of a drive for you, it's worth it because once you get there and taste that food, you know how delicious it is and how full you're going to be on the way home. Check them out. And when you want to get there, it's right off Highway 99. Within a mile, you'll find it on the right-hand side of 1093, and you will get where you need to go, and you will taste that best Italian food in the area. I love them. You will, too. Check them out and check the menu out, frankiesitaliankitchentx.com.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Evan Drylik was on with Paul Gallant today on the Paul Gallant Experience, the most interactive show in Houston. Of course, Evan Drylik used to work for the Chronicle, covered the Astros beat writer there, moved on to the Boston Globe, and then found the sign-stealing stuff, went over to the Athletic, and he and Ken Rosenthal broke the whole sign-stealing stuff. Evan Drylik is now out with a book. I'm gonna print out a copy later today and read that bad boy. But Drylik goes on with Gallant today, and I haven't heard it yet. I'm totally trusting Joe George here. Should we be trusting Joe George? 713-780-3776. We're totally at the mercy of Joe George when it, yeah, the donut, and when playing Evan Drylik's sound. What do you got for us, Joe George?
We're going to start with his quote on the Astros being the only team with evidence of this level of cheating.
Okay.
Yes, it is factual that other teams were breaking the rules. Other teams have been punished. The Red Sox twice, the Yankees once. I think it's reasonable to believe that other teams were bending the rules probably in a similar fashion. Is it impossible that another team was doing something on the level of the Astros? No, it is not. The reality is we don't have evidence of it, right? It's been years now. And maybe, who knows, someday maybe somebody will say, yeah, we were doing exactly the same thing or maybe something worse. But at this point in time, the Astros 2017 scheme generally is regarded, and I would personally regard it, as being different than what other teams were undertaking.
There you go. I don't think that the Astros scheme was all that sophisticated. Maybe I'm on the minority here, but banging a bat on a trash can is not the most sophisticated thing I've ever heard. We've heard of Apple Watches and iPads and phones to the bullpen. I think everybody had cameras in center field.
The Gatorade, the light at the corner of the Gatorade sign in center field for the White Sox back in La Russa's days. I mean, there was some pretty elaborate schemes and some electronics involved, and you went caveman with the garbage can and the bat, but let's, you know, getting from point A to point B when you used monitors and cameras and other things, they had a scheme. And
yeah, but I mean, everybody needed a camera and everybody needed a monitor.
Well, what did Eric Kratz say that
he said the Rockies were using a massage gun on the bench.
Yeah,
which is, I think, smarter than a bat to a trash can.
It's way smarter.
It's way smarter. Like, I don't understand the sophistication level that the Astros were using. That was like like you said, that was caveman. Oh, yep. Bang, bat, trash can, boom, boom. Like, that wasn't that sophisticated.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we go back to, and I don't know if Paul got into it with him or not, to have, you know, and Paul wouldn't be afraid to ask the question, but he always has had a little bit of an axe to grind with the Astros. I wonder how much that plays into his opinion.
I've been prepping for that interview, because we were supposed to have it, for like 3 weeks, and I had 4 bullet points to ask Drylik. when the Astros tried to have him removed from the beat. I wanted to get him to that story. I wanted to ask him about the players using steroids during the PED era, because I think that there's a lot of similarities here. Also, why not the desire to look into other teams that were cheating? Because he's looked into the Astros. Now, he did have the source in Mike Fiers, but no one's really went into the deep dive for any other teams. There's been surface-level reporting. There was the letter that was also leaked out to the Martino guy in New York. That way he could give it a soft landing. But there's never been a deep dive, investigative journalist diving into
yes
other
Network
teams.
Yes, cameras were used in sure. center field. Remember, Spader was the one that started to blow the door open a little bit more on that with the Yankees' access to having the camera moved
yeah.
to more an ideal position by the Yes Network.
And then the other one was the he called Jim Crane a bad owner, which how? How was Jim Crane a bad owner?
That's a – from what I've read in the book so far, I don't think he's calling Jim Crane a bad owner. I think he's calling Jim Crane a bad person.
Oh, okay, that's better.
I think there's a distinction. Like, I really do. Like, you know, there's one of the things that's highlighted in one of the excerpts that I saw was it going back to the business issues that Jim had before he bought the Astros, whatever antitrust stuff was going yeah. on, and how they had to make sure the other owners were aware of that when he purchased the Astros.
Yeah, and he did settle out of court with the whole minority thing when he was accused of saying not to hire minorities because then you can't fire them. And he got sued for that and settled out of court. Like, that's a fact. I mean, that mm-hmm. did happen. So I understand that. And look, I don't think Nick Saban's a great person. He's a great coach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So those two things are not always mutually exclusive. All right, let's get to another Evan Drylik for whatever Joe George pulled for us. What you got?
All right, here's Evan Drylik on what separates the Astros cheating from other teams.
For as much as you hear people say, oh, everyone was doing something, the evidence doesn't show that. The evidence shows that veteran contending teams like the Red Sox, the Yankees, the book has reporting on the Dodgers, had been using a base runner system, meaning you were using your video room to decode signs, get it to the dugout, get it to the runner on second base. So there's evidence of veteran contending teams. There's not evidence, except for people, you know, third-party finger-pointing allegations saying, everybody was doing it. Well, you know, show me. You know,
go find it.
The thing that separated the reporting that Ken Rosenthal and I did at The Athletic on both the Astros and the Red Sox was that it was from the inside. It wasn't just random Joe Schmo going, random player going, oh, yeah, I think those guys are up to no good. But it's not really evidence of it, right? And so there's got to be some threshold of that.
See, that's what bothers me from the Astros' point of view. I firmly believe the Astros were stealing signs. Like, I don't think it's a conspiracy that the Astros really were. Yeah, it's a fact. It is a fact. I am of the belief that they were keeping up with the Joneses and that everybody else was doing it. Carlos Beltran flat out said it in Astro Ball, that we were way behind the times and we had to catch up.
Beltran and Cora were guys that were spearheading.
Also got suspended for a year for their part in the whole sign-stealing scheme. What bothers me is he says that there's no other evidence for other teams. You're the investigative journalist. You're the one that's putting this together. You're the one that's trying to, like, bring together as much controversy that you possibly can. But the reason that you didn't is because you had only one source in Fiers. You didn't really hunt the others. And then secondly, you were bitter towards the Astros.
And that's the biggest thing in all of this is every team needs a Fiers. Because if you had the firestorm of every team having a Fiers where they could highlight and just basically spell out so there isn't anything left for guessing, then I think that, and I've said this all along too, at a certain point in time, there are going to be different players in their lives that realize that there's not much anything for them to gain by keeping quiet anymore, and they're going to just come out and say, well, we did this and we did that. And that's when we'll truly be able to connect all the dots to say this. But until the Dodgers have a Fiers and a whistleblower, and the Yankees would have a whistleblower.
Yeah. They have an unnamed source, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what there is here. You know what other, what like Joe just said that Drylik called him a Jim Crane a bad guy. You're usually going to try to go after a guy who you think is bad.
Steinbrenner was a bad guy.
Right, but like whenever you're trying to like find things for the story, if you like the owner, you might have a different way of going about putting together the article
investigative
journalist.
What's the difference between David Ortiz and Barry Bonds?
He's likable. He's likable. It's the same thing with Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams. Why does Joe DiMaggio have more MVPs than Ted Williams? It wasn't because he was a better baseball player.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that's the biggest thing of what – look, we all know. We've all heard the rumors and the innuendos about how much of a scumbag Mike Fiers was. He wasn't liked in the Astros clubhouse. Like, they've openly talked about I've seen text messages. I've seen DMs where these players, they hate Mike Fiers. I mean, Evan Gattis has a cup in which Mike Fiers is a rat and he drinks out of it and he posts it on social media.
Oh, like, okay.
It's been a while since he's posted it, but it's happened. Like, there are – Mike Fiers was not liked in that clubhouse. He was pissed off that he was left off the playoff roster, deservedly so.
Showed it, and he tantrumed.
And he snitched.
And then he snitched. I'm saying even before he snitched, the tantrums and the, you know, putting yourself above the team and getting pissed off when your performance sucked but you still thought you deserved to be there kind of things, and all the things that he pulled while he was here – yeah, I mean, look, like I said, if the Dodgers have a named player that's willing to come out at some point and admit what they did, or the Yankees or the Red Sox, then we can truly have all the proof we need. But it's happening. We've already seen it happen. More and more as time goes by, more and more guys are going to be willing to talk, and some of them is going to put their name on it.
The problem is that by the time that happens, the Astros will be bad and all these guys will be long gone.
True. It could be that long.
Because I don't think that these players will ever talk.
Yeah, maybe not. And that was the reason that Kelly was mad, was that they talked, not that the Astros did it. Let's get to the last one about Major League Baseball tried to make this all go away.
The entire appearance of the Red Sox investigation is that MLB wanted to quiet this. It wanted it to go away. I think it would be, in a pure and idealistic world, you would want MLB to investigate fully, literally every team, I guess. Right, I think that's what people would. That what would be fair. The reality is these investigations are never conducted on the basis truly of fairness. The Department of Investigations at MLB serves MLB, serves the owners, serves the interests of the sport. The interest of the sport, from the commissioner's perspective, is making this stuff go away. And so, I think it is reasonable for Astros fans to stand there and say, "Look, MLB made an example of us." I don't think that washes away this question of, well, what they were doing, also the most egregious example of it, to date, that is absolutely the case. But, you know, if you're MLB, you want to deter the behavior going forward, and you want your sport not to be mired in scandal.
There you go. I mean, at least Dreilich's point, he said, yeah, MLB was trying to cover it up, and basically.
We said that, said as much multiple times, that, look, they want the Astros to be the poster children, and they want you to believe that they were the only team doing it so they can make it go away as fast as possible. In the process, they're protecting their biggest markets and their most dominant names in the Yankees, Dodgers, and Red Sox. But at the same time, we knew that this was what Robbie Manfred was trying to do all along, was to make it go away, because I always make the reference to the NBA officials. If it was just one official that was cheating, it's one thing. If you find out it was 10 or 12 or, you know, a 3 or 4, a bigger sample size, now the whole league could be corrupt. Now you're losing money across the entire league, and as an imaging standpoint and a marketing standpoint, millions of dollars.
Yeah, the NBA took care of him, too.
Yeah, I do think that with, like, in comparison to Tim Donaghy, you know, if you watch his documentary that's on Netflix right now, there's very clear lines that they point out in that doc about how he would call Scott Foster every day multiple times. And it's very clear that there looks like a pattern of their sharing gambling tips between Tim and Scott. And I think one day we will get that with the Astros. I think the line is going to be that Bregman, McCullers, and all these guys will talk when these weaselly-ass voters don't want to put Altuve in the Hall of Fame. I think that is when the Astros players are Good going call. To make a stand and tell the truth, because they're going to have to say, they're going to have to prove how much Correa and all these guys cheated and Altuve didn't to get him into the Hall of Fame.
Because to Jeremy's point, he's right. They should investigate all these teams, and the same investigative journalists should go with the same kind of vim and vigor and intensity that they did at the Astros. The problem is, take Ryan Spader. Ryan Spader was coming out guns blazing one day with all the investigative journalism he did, and then the freaking mafia that is the Major League Baseball with Rob Manfred came at him with a cease and desist and a whole lot more and said, you know that extra coin you've been making and those appearances on MLB TV and all the things we've been doing for you? That all stops unless you stop right now and walk it back. And 24 hours later, when he was scheduled to be on the bench and with us, he was suddenly walking it back, moonwalking it back and saying, I'm not talking. Now he's changing his tune again to say the reasons why where baseball was strong-arming it.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I think he's just a fraud, personally.
Why?
Because before those interviews got canceled, my past life, they got that interview, and it was the worst interview in the history of sports talk radio in which you could tell he had no factual basis for a single thing he was saying. It's just my honest opinion. Like, I just, if he really had that evidence, I don't think he would have backed down like he did.
Yeah.
You don't think they threatened Drelick and Rosenthal?
No.
They got Rosenthal fired.
What? Yeah, but
from MLB Network.
Years later.
But he's a front man for the league still.
He's still on Fox. He's still on the World Series. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, they're not doing that.
Yeah, I think to Dreilich's point, though, like Major League Baseball isn't in the interest of properly and fairly penalizing all the teams across the board. The commissioner works
protecting
for the owners
sport.
And is protecting the shield. So you make one fall guy and you keep all the other guys afloat. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 32 shows until opening day for the Astros. Pitchers and catchers reported today. We continue our countdown next. What if Michael Brantley's ready for opening day? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
BK3 with the shrug picture on his Twitter. He says the reasons why no one else has come out on any other team is because look where Fires is now. The current players don't want to get blackballed into the Mexican League. Also, you'll never convince me that the Astros are the only team cheating. Fires was also bad, but I agree that when players retire, they're going to come out more. And there has been some players that have clout that have talked about this. Like Eric Kratz, I think, was pretty much out of baseball, right? But you've had Joey Votto, no one's getting rid of Joey Votto. You've had Miguel Cabrera talk about this stuff. No one's getting rid of Miguel Cabrera. You need a certain level of clout or out of baseball. Bassett, I think.
Chris Bassett.
He's with Toronto now.
Yep.
He's a good enough pitcher where, we're going to put up with Chris Bassett. Not that he's a problem. He just spoke out about it, and he's really good, so he's going to have no problem getting a job. Could Fiers currently be pitching in Major League Baseball if he wasn't the Rat? I tend to think not.
I don't think his ability is there anymore.
They're also not naming names.
True.
You know, Joey Votto, when he was on Dan Patrick, it was like, he said it, the Astros weren't the other team. Same thing. I think Scherzer said it too.
Yeah.
At one point last year. No, it was Chris Sale said it on WEI in Boston.
Oh, that's right.
He said that the Astros weren't the only other team. Eric Kratz is really the only one that has directly accused another team with the
Rockies.
And
he was done, and he had been basically, he was retiring from baseball.
Yeah.
And I don't think you're going to get current players that are still looking for jobs, even if they were better clubhouse guys, because of the fact that's what I'm saying. When their bread doesn't need to be buttered anymore by baseball, when they've made their money, they've walked away from the game, they have other opportunities, and they realize whether it is a make profit book opportunity or an interview that's paid for or whatever, or they just come out and say, look, truth be told, I got to get this off my chest. This is what actually happened. It might not be to your liking on the time frame, but it's going
to
happen.
I think to Joe's point, too, is that there's kind of a code for most amongst the sport where you're not going to drop names. You're going to protect your own, unless that there's a dislike there and Fiers was a goofball and weird and creepy. 713-780-ESPN, our Astros opening day countdown. Astros have reported to spring training. Pitchers and catchers are there. I saw Jose Urquidy throw a picture on Houston Astros Twitter, or throw a pitch on Houston Astros Twitter. What if Michael Brantley is ready for opening day? What does that mean for this team?
I think it's great, but I don't think it's going to sway the needle all that much because this team is laced with talent. That we've talked about how good this lineup is. It changes and alters your outfield a little bit. It gives you more consistent hitting. It gives you a guy that is, a 300 hitter no matter where you put him in the lineup, as opposed to hoping Chaz McCormick still hits well and whatever Jake Myers can do for you and whatever you try to do to, how many times you put Yordan in left field. But I think if Michael Brantley is ready from day one, it just bolsters the entire lineup. It gives you more offensive production, and it gives you a better chance to score a lot of runs. But even without him, I think they'll be just fine because it's the most complete team in baseball.
I tend to think that Michael Brantley is going to be ready by opening day because, right now, the 13 guys you're going to have on this team from an offensive point of view is pretty much set. Your last three players are Myers, Dubon, and Hensley. The fact that they didn't bring in anybody else tells me that Michael Brantley will be on the active roster on opening day. Because what else are you going to do? You start the year with Brantley on the IL. Who's the dude you're bringing up? There's really not that option that is out there. Could you get by some random dude for 2 weeks? Maybe. But I think at that point, you probably would have just signed a Yuli or somebody like that, or a utility player. So I think Brantley is going to be ready for opening day. Now, I like your point, too, where, hey, take it easy with Brantley early on. Don't play him every single day. Give him off days throughout. Now, he does have the incentive-laden contract. We might want to play a lot. But I need Michael Brantley healthy for the playoffs. That's the reason Michael Brantley's on this team.
You don't win a World Series in April, but you certainly can lose one if you rush him back too quick. You need him for October.
Yeah. I mean, I can nitpick you and say they don't need him for October, considering they won the World Series without him a year ago. Still. But I'd rather have Michael Brantley on this team when the playoffs roll around. I would love to have that veteran presence and that contact hitter on this team when the playoffs roll around. The 162 is not the important thing for the Houston Astros if they're going to run away with the division. I don't know if they're going to run away with the division, but I think they're going to win the division comfortably. So make sure that he's healthy in the playoffs. I think the question becomes, if Brantley is ready for opening day, and I think he's going to be, is the lineup. Because everybody loves to freak out about the lineup, looking at Dusty's lineups, which I've never done that. And Dusty, I trust you, I've always said it. A lot of people have the Brantley or Pena two-hole conversation. That's the conversation that is the most popular when you look at this lineup.
I mean, look, you can have it. It's a great luxury to have. Again, I don't want to rush Michael Brantley because I don't want him to lose 100%. And I have the luxury of putting lineups out there that can competitively win games in the major leagues without him being in it while he's getting healthy. If he's healthy and he's ready for opening day, then he should be in the lineup. Where he hits in that lineup depends on how many at-bats he gets in spring training, how that shoulder's reacting. And if you feel, again, like he's 100%, then you give him every opportunity to hit high in the lineup. Now, is it moving Pena back down again? I don't know, because Michael Brantley's going to be steady no matter where you put him, and he's a professional. I think Jeremy Pena is at a point in his career where he still is a little more volatile in terms of there's some things that could bother him mentally. And you, that's where Dusty's really got to play the player game and talk to him and see where his head's at. Is he okay moving back down to the bottom of the lineup? Does he understand it? Does he feel like after the success and everything that he's coming off of, that he needs to be in the number two hole? I don't think Brantley's going to push back either way.
Yeah. The thing, like, I can make a case either way. I think there's better lineup feng shui with Brantley because you can do the righty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty pretty much throughout the entire lineup, which we know Dusty loves that, and Dusty we trusty. But the other side of the argument is, when was Jeremy Pena at his absolute best? It's whenever he was batting second and had the protection of the middle of this lineup. I think Brantley doesn't need the protection, at least what we saw last year. Brantley doesn't need the protection that Jeremy Pena did. Jeremy Pena batting second was a different player than Jeremy Pena batting in the bottom of the order. Do I think Brantley's going to have that drop-off going from second to seventh? No, he's a professional hitter. The dude's just going to flat-out hit. Do I think Pena needs the protection batting second versus seventh? I think that he might.
He still swings at a lot of bad pitches. He struggles sometimes with off-speed pitches, and I think that you're right. When you put him up at the top of the lineup and they know what their alternatives are and who they have to face if they don't face him, seeing better pitches and maybe even more so fastballs, but I think that helps a Jeremy Pena. I think Michael Brantley is such a great eye at the plate and hits both breaking balls and fastballs effectively that wherever you put him, he's going to hit. He's proven that his whole career, and his career is long enough now where the numbers don't lie and you go, I trust him anywhere. If it means the difference, like I said, and Pena's more comfortable in the two and he expresses that, or you feel that, then you go that way.
I don't know if this is going to qualify for a bad take boulevard, but...
Probably will.
What if... A radical idea.
Kyle Tucker in the leadoff spot.
What if Michael Brantley led off?
Oh, and you can keep the lineup feng shui?
So Brantley, Pena, and then Altuve probably third.
You already lost the lineup feng shui.
So Brantley, Pena, Alvarez, Altuve, Tucker.
Bregman?
Bregman Abreu? I don't
like it at all. Because of the pop in Altuve's bat, he gives you power in the leadoff spot as well as some... And I know he's not a great base runner, but
he still has bases, though.
But yeah, he has speed, and with the new rule and rules, it could help him. I won't miss... What I used to say last year... Don't mix with multiple positions when you're just dealing with fixing one. Uh-huh. Like when Dusty used to bat like Dubon in the two hole
put him in that spot.
And now you're moving got multiple guys in the lineup. Just don't break. If the lineup has been great the way it's been, just worry about the two hole and either and just say to Pena and to Brantley, if you're in the two, you're in the two. If you're not, then you're going to be in the six, seven, eight, wherever you're going.
I think I'm Pena two hole.
I've always liked Altuve as a three hole hitter. Now, this team loves him in the leadoff spot, so not going to fix it, like not going to mess with it. Like, the idea of a Bregman or a Tucker in the leadoff spot intrigues me. But again, like, what's the point of trying to mess with it? Like, it's worked. They love Altuve in the leadoff spot. I think that Brantley's a more natural and a better two-hole hitter than Jeremy Pena, but I don't think Brantley needs the protection. Jeremy Pena just was a different player.
He really
in
was.
The two-hole whenever he had that Yordan protection. So I lean Pena, but if Dusty wants to go Brantley, In Dusty, I trusty. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Jabari, Jalen, Shingun, they're all playing in the Rising Star Challenge. But are those guys actually rising stars? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville is a game changer when it comes to your hair game, because you might be thinning and balding, and you might need some assistance. And we're not talking about the sprays and creams and foams that only mask the problem. I'm talking about the Neograft procedure, because the Neograft procedure is taking your own hair, where genetically you're never going to lose it. That's the sides and the back. Moving it where you need it most. Maybe you got a baboon's butt that keeps showing up on the top of your dome piece, and you don't like that, how that looks when you're going out. Maybe your forehead has become an 8-head, and you don't think there's any change other than the ability to shave your head as the answer in the long-term solution. No, the Neograft can handle it. And they can handle it really, really well. Because when Doc Linville takes your own hair and puts it where you need it most, you reap the benefits on a daily basis. The hair is going to get thicker and stronger and longer and stay with you for the long haul. And that's the game changer for me. That's why I made the decision to go with the Neograft. 95%+ of the follicles that are moved are going to stay and grow and be there for you for the rest of your life. That's a fantastic number for me. That was the one that won me over and made me do the procedure. If you want all the questions answered and you can do it for free, normally it's $150 to have a consultation with the office and Doc Linville and his staff. For ESPN listeners, just go to 975hair.com. That's 975hair.com. Make an appointment. It's free to you. No obligation, no charge. Ask all the questions. Get all the answers and see if you could be the next person to benefit from the Neograft. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. It's 975hair.com and my good friend Doc Linville.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station. I'm taking a day off to play some golf with favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by PsychJab.com. Benefiting Kids Mills, this year's tournament will take place Wednesday, March 8th at 10:30 a.m. at Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer will receive beverages from Carbach Brewing Company, lunch, dinner, 18 holes of golf, and quick award ceremony immediately after the tournament. Register now at ESPN975.com. Yeah, they sold a foursome for me, and they're giving me a comp day to golf.
Interesting.
At the Occasional Invitational.
It says quick award ceremony. Not if Johnny G is hosting again and has had a few cocktails.
I wouldn't.
It gets a little dicey, and it gets a little long.
Do you have a recording of it I can watch?
There might be one still out there somewhere.
Was it out there?
I think there was, because Johnny pushed a couple envelopes.
I'm disappointed I did not see that. I would have really enjoyed to see that. Yeah, who do you have filling in that day?
I don't. It doesn't matter. Joe. I mean, just anybody.
Doesn't matter.
Just Joe.
Just Joe.
It doesn't matter. We'll just get Joe to do it.
Just doesn't
matter. I mean,
matter.
50-50 shot, Joe's going to be here that day.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's perfect attendance.
Plus, I'm worried about, we can't put Joe on the course because the attire wouldn't fit, so he has to be somewhere.
Do you own a polo shirt, Joe?
Yeah, I've worn them like multiple times.
Do you own a pair of golf shorts?
Can we just start with khakis?
Yes and yes.
Okay, and do you have golf shoes?
That's a no.
You don't need those.
No?
Do you have a pair of sticks?
No. A pair?
I mean...
A set.
His pair or set. I mean, I don't think he's doing much other than driving and putting.
Okay, you're right.
You think he's
right.
Contributing to the foursome?
No, they didn't. They didn't make the 8 years ago trip from Illinois.
Oh, they didn't?
No, I came down in one car. I didn't have any...
You got time to ship them.
I left all my furniture from home, and then they sold it.
Oh, wow.
They sold your clubs, too?
Yeah.
Will those bad boys go for about $5?
Probably. Maybe right. 10.
They melted it down for
those
scrap.
Those rummage sales are killers.
5-7-4-2. I'm putting Pena at 2. He was better in the 2-hole and needs the lineup protection. Brantley can hit anywhere in the lineup. I agree. The only thing is you're going righty-righty, then lefty-righty, lefty-righty. And we know that Dusty loves the lineup feng shui, which in Dusty, we trusty. 9-1-9-8. Pena, Brantley, Altuve, Bregman, Alvarez, Abreu, Tucker, McCormick, Maldonado. Tucker's hitting too low.
He's not hitting that low.
Kyle Tucker should not be hitting seventh in a lineup. He should be hitting in the top five.
And he's got Pena leading off.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all.
They tried that a little bit last year.
It didn't go so well.
Great. Pena doesn't have a great on-base percentage. Yes, he came alive in the postseason, was great. He had like a 30% on-base percentage. Like, that's not great.
At this point in his career, coming off what he did and everybody expecting him to do it again, the don't mess with it and keep him where he was when he was at his best, because mentally he needs that too, as opposed to Brantley, who doesn't.
9-3-0-7-1. Altuve, Pena, Yordan, Bregman, Brantley, Abreu, Tucker, McCormick, Maldonado. again, Tucker's too low. I think that, like, if you want to do that route, Pena in the two hole, flip Brantley and Tucker, where you're going Tucker 5, Brantley 7. So a revised correction to this lineup, I would go Altuve, Pena, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu, Brantley, and I would actually go Maldonado 8, Chaz 9, kind of give you a second leadoff option, but I don't really care too much about that. That could go either way for me. Ultimately, though, I think that Dusty Baker is going to start off with Brantley in the two hole because he plays the veterans.
He plays the veterans, but I think that he knows too, as a player's manager, that if he can see that this, just even discussing it, he'll be able to read the reactions of Pena, and you would assume Pena's going to be honest with him anyway. If Pena gets to the point where his feelings are hurt a little bit, or this, he doesn't like this decision,
toughen up.
I think Uncle Mike can handle it no matter what, and he's not going to have a problem with it, whereas opposed to I think Pena might.
I never care about a player's feelings.
This is a guy that's going to be potentially your franchise player for the next 10 years. I think you got to care about it a lot more than you would if it was, you know, just a younger guy versus a veteran.
I think he starts off with Brantley in the two-hole, Pena in the seven, and if Pena struggles, that's his, like, get him hot move, is move him up to the two spot, see how he acts to it early in the year. We'll see. Jabari Smith, Jalen Green, Alpi Shingun are playing in the Rising Star Challenge. Which of these guys, or all of these guys, do you actually consider rising stars in the NBA? Well,
I said this before in terms of the non-trade possibilities and who would you hang on to and who's non-trade, untradeable. And I know the bench thought that Jalen Green could be tradable, I think, this morning. I think Jalen Green and Shingun are the only two guys on this roster I'm not trading. And if the right deal comes along for anybody else, I'm not only considering it, I'm probably leaning towards doing it because of the fact that there's still so many question marks as opposed to, you know, set in stones. And as good as those two guys are, we haven't seen enough to know that they're going to be foundational go-to and potentially one of your highest paid players and your franchise players going down the next three, four years. So I got to see more from them, but those are the only two. Jabari, look, he's young. You know, the ceiling's high. The ability to still get better and better is there. But what I've seen early on is he's raw. He needs a lot of work. And if you need a lot of work, then that's something that I don't know that, you know, how many guys you're going to be willing to work with, especially with this coaching staff, who's obviously not working a whole lot with anybody.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the way out. I know Jabari's been, like, there was an article came out today where Silas talked about Jabari and how he hasn't used Jabari Smith in any plays, which is like, okay, the dude was the number three pick of the NBA draft. He's got an offensive skill set that can be helpful. Does it need to be developed? Does it need to be, you know, worked on? Absolutely. He's 19 years old. You're not getting a complete player when he's 19 years old. Jabari Smith's three-point percentage this year as a rookie is better than LeBron James' three-point percentage whenever he was a rookie entering the NBA. Jabari Smith's going to be fine. Jabari Smith needs some help. I think Jabari Smith is going to develop a better three-point shooting percentage. I also think a reason that it's as low as it is because, again, he's trying to get his own. He's not getting anything drawn up for him. He's not getting any easy looks. I like all three of these guys. I think all three of these guys are part of a foundation of a playoff team. Now, if somebody blows you away with a trade, I'd be listening. I'd listen. Everybody's got a price.
Well, because you have so much more work to do no matter where you're picking in next year's draft. And then at a certain point, you got to start developing a true team. Because like you said, there's an internal fighting every possession and who gets to shoot the ball between Scoot and between Jalen and Jabari and everyone. Oh, you shot it twice down and you got to run the ISO. It's my turn. I got to get a shot up. I'm not getting enough shots. Eric Gordon's gone, but that doesn't mean the problems are fixed.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Call the Wheelhouse and complain about things. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to Joe George for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.